We have not discussed all of its implications. We can't in a short period like this. But why is it that we have not really told ourselves or told the world that we have been willing to tackle this very difficult matter positively, as you have in Korea and in Japan? I think remarkably, I just looked at some figures last night from a statement, both private sources in Japan and the government, I mean our army, showing that 90% of the cultivated land is now in the hands of owner-operators, cultivators. And yet the world and we ourselves have just avoided this topic. We haven't taken credit for having achieved this much.
Let me tell you why, Schultz. Land reform is just one part of the many reforms we need to insist on in order to lick communism, in order to bring prosperity and stability to the governments of the world. There's police and judiciary reform, educational reform, finance and fiscal policy and taxation. One of the things that made the Japanese reform work as it did, as Moyer mentioned, was inflation. All of these reforms have to be licked concurrently, or any one of them is not sufficient to do the job. Well, now, that's a big order. That means that we in the Western world try to coerce the land-owning governments in these backward nations to reform themselves, when the reforms will often mean a decline in their own influence and in their wealth.
Yes, yes.
Now, well, how are we going to lick that without being imperialistic, Schultz?
Yes. Now, I'm inclined to hold the reform, the land aspect to one side, and again, taking advantage of your concrete experiences here, ask this question. As an American, and looking out to the Asiatic world, we feel that no matter what one touches there, there isn't the same business integrity. It's a different culture and a different society. This is not to say it's bad. I don't want to leave the impression that I'm passing a moral value, although by implication I might. Now, how does one get honesty and efficiency in the administration of these concrete programs? How do you get it in Formosa?
I'd like to report our experience in Formosa on that subject. First of all, we gave people in our program a living salary. Many of the wage levels of governments in these areas at the present time do not permit a real living salary. Secondly, we carry this out in a joint manner. It was joint in the truest sense of the word, in which Americans and Chinese sat down together and brought to the problems the best that each side had to offer in understanding and information and judgment, both as to the situation and how to deal with it. And the Chinese were at least as concerned as the Americans on this commission that the money be handled well. We had inspectors who went out, examined accounts and examined work progress, reported back. We had technicians. In these various ways, we feel that the funds that we used were indeed handled well and largely for the purposes intended.
This is a remarkable testimony because I imagine that most of us feel that this can't be done and can't be achieved. And yet you are saying that in this specific project of rural reconstruction in Formosa, you have licked this matter. Let me turn to you, Mitchell. Could you do it? Did you achieve it in your programs in Korea?
To lick corruption and graft and squeeze in
governments
of the backward areas of the world is extremely difficult, but with enough devotion to duty, enough Western technicians to show the people the efficiencies of and honesty of modern administrative and technological processes, it can be done.
Without interference?
I think we did. Oh, no, no. There is interference. We sold the land, the Japanese land in South Korea, I think, in an extremely honest fashion. The major revolution we brought about was selling it to the tenants without asking them questions as to their political beliefs. The local Korean officials didn't want to sell land to tenants until they had been thoroughly screened to make sure they were safe politically. The Americans in South Korea insisted that the land be sold to the tenants who had paid their rent without any attempt to screen them, without any graft, without any squeeze. It required a great deal of what I call paternalism. After the land sale was over, I think the Korean officials agreed that it was a great success and a great operation in Western-type democracy.
Well, that's really, again, evidence. Again, let me go toward you now, Moyer. In the case of Formosa, you have established a program which has involved the vaccination of hogs to avoid cholera, the stamping out of rinderpest in cattle. Now, how did you do this so that you didn't get into this dishonesty, that your resources in part or in large part didn't go for other purposes, just to line people's pockets, let's put it crudely?
To begin with, we secured full cooperation on the part of the government and interest in it. Many of these things cannot be done without determination on part of the government itself. It's my conviction that one doesn't know what these governments might do until they're approached. We never would have supposed that we could have carried out a land rent reduction program in Sichuan province under existing conditions. The officials of that province were not particularly enlightened. The governor was essentially an old warlord. But when it was put up to him in terms of what it meant and what it might mean in stability, he went along with it and pushed it. And I think that's one of the important parts of it.
Truth, I'd like to go back to my theme that the United Nations can handle these programs of inducing and coercing the backward government into the proper reforms better than any nation can. In the short time the United Nations Temporary Commission was in Korea in 1948, I saw an amazing thing happen. This group was composed of representatives of small as well as large countries. That little group snooped around in all sorts of dark corners and uncovered corruption and graft and intimidation in Korea. It was not a bit afraid of the American Occupation Army, which had always tried mightily to keep these things undercover. I liked the way that UN group operated. They represented little countries with chips on their shoulders. They were particularly good in ferreting out instances where civil liberties were being violated under the guise of maintaining order.
Well, here, you again, I think, enlighten us and inform us as Americans very, very much. Because in the concrete, apparently, one can break through and one can avoid these colossal runs or drains of resources which seem to bring no productivity, no progress in their way. This is what you're saying, Moyer, and this is what you're saying, Mitchell. How about competence in another sense now, not the integrity and the honesty and the efficiency, but competence, particularly as you get to the administrative and down to technical competence? Your joint approach, it seems to me, ought to have brought a good deal to the surface, Moyer.
That, of course, is one of the most important and in some place most difficult problems. It varies a great deal from country to country. In some areas, there have been very few local people trained. In other areas, as in Formosa, we have a large number of very competent trained Chinese working in this program. However, we must think also of American competence. That means not only technical competence. One of the reasons that we're not always popular abroad is the behavior of Americans abroad, not taking into account the sensibilities of the local people or understanding culture and other elements in the situation. It's one of the greatest problems, as I see it, getting competence, both local and outside competence, in all these different respects which are important and necessary for success.
But again, you're stressing that the joint commission approach which you have had, in a sense, has been able to draw in from both sides and get a working arrangement that was manageable and brought through. Now, Mitchell, in this part of the world, there is this great desire to industrialize, to move rapidly on the industrial front. And very frequently when you listen to colleagues from statesmen, spokesmen, leaders from these countries, they want a steel industry like you have in the Ruhr, you see. They want heavy industry. They want the large investments. Now, this seems fantastic and impossible, certainly in the short run. What's the approach?
This jump from the 17th century to the 20th century that I mentioned at the beginning of our discussion here is a tremendous jump. I think there must be some midpoint. There need to be set up throughout the backward areas of the world small, not too complex industries such as cement mills, fertilizer factories, sulfuric acid plants, looms and weaving plants, iron foundries to make pots and pans, brass works and the like. I think we can do well to set up hundreds of vocational schools in these countries. Teach the people the basic technical background of the civilization they're going to have in the future.
Mr. Moyer?
I agree with Mitchell on that. I think that there are places where this would be very important. However, there also are problems of larger industries and of the services, such as railways, of power, and so on, which require development on a bigger scale. On Formosa, we have what I think is a very useful mechanism for giving advice through a consultant group of engineers who could study and advise on the development and on the solution of problems in these fields.
Well, now, your comments and your insights are, as I said before, very instructive. And yet, as a person looking at our own showcase, the Philippines, I have a feeling of apprehension. We do not have in that government, apparently, integrity and efficiency and honesty in administration. We did not crack the feudal land ownership pattern. And we have not gotten the industries in. But let me ask you to summarize this in your own words as you see it. for the purposes that we've had this morning.
Do you refer particularly to the Philippines?
No, in the total now, in terms of drawing out of this experience that you've had in Formosa and what Mr. Mitchell has said as we've discussed this problem.
My feeling is that, first of all, we must recognize what the situation is. Remember that we're in the midst of an area which, of conditions which are undeveloped and the other things which I've mentioned. In my judgment, there is no cure-all for this situation. We have indicated some of the ways in which the problems can be met, but there are a number of approaches. And the thing that I feel most strongly is a general feeling that we should make it a problem of our diplomacy to find helpful ways in the different ways we are related, politically, economically, to solve the problem.
Mitchell? I'm going to say, Schultz, that we perhaps ought to push even stronger than Moyer intimates we should. We should coerce these reactionary governments to reform themselves socially and industrially, even though the reforms will mean a decline in the influence and importance of the land-owning aristocracy making up the government. Now, how are we going to do it? The money and the know-how of the United States, the moral strength of the United Nations will be the inducement. The UN already has an excellent International Declaration of Human Rights. Governments, to qualify for aid in the future, should begin to work on these reform measures immediately.
We want social and economic progress. The difficulties are great, particularly in the field of interference in the timetable. I have gotten a good deal of insight of how one can do something despite the problem or the difficulty in time and in interference when you look at these things in the concrete as you two gentlemen have done. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Taking part in today's University of Chicago Roundtable on How Can We Win Friends in Asia, the sixth program in the Roundtable series on Problems of Asia, were Raymond Mayer, head of the Joint Commission of Rural Reconstruction in China, Clyde Mitchell, chairman of the Department of Agricultural Economics, University of Nebraska, and formerly head of the National Land Commission in Korea, and Theodore W. Schultz, chairman of the Department of Economics of the University of Chicago. The printed pamphlet of today's roundtable discussion of How Can We Win Friends in Asia contains the full text of the discussion and special materials on the problem of American aid to Asia and the projects which you have heard discussed today. Be sure to write to the University of Chicago Roundtable, Chicago 37, Illinois, to secure your copy of today's pamphlet. Single copies are 10 cents in coin. A full year's subscription to the roundtable pamphlet costs only $3. Enclose $3 with your order and make your subscription begin with today's problem. I'll repeat the address, the University of Chicago Roundtable, Chicago 37, Illinois. Well, next week, the Roundtable concludes its series on problems of Asia in a discussion of Confucius and China today. Today's program originated from the Mitchell Tower Studios of the University of Chicago. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.